and got the thumbs up.
Okay, but I'm writing something down.
Oh, no, so we're not
I was writing down Black Snape Moan.
Oh, boy.
You know, like that movie, Black Snape Moan?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Samuel L. Jackson.
But there's a Black Snape now.
Uh-oh.
So
we well, might... okay, let's dive right in then. This is an emergency podcast recording. They hired a Black Snape, and so we're recording this early.
We all hands on deck, but we are allowed again by popular demand.
Yes.
This opening skit is back. Our corporate masters said we had to be mainstream sellouts in order to attract a larger audience. But we said...
we're going to double down on a smaller audience.
We want an even smaller audience. If anyone is still listening to this, we consider it a policy failure. And so we give Freed Up back to you, the people. Gotham is yours.
What a lovely voice.
So
yes, we want a small cadre of fanatics.
Yes,
dedicated to this show.
We want them to tattoo our faces on their balls,
but wherever.
Okay,
anywhere but your testicles.
Okay, not on your testicles.
Yeah,
maybe a trashy tramp stamp type thing.
Hmm, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. So you're the Ayatollah. They're trying to make you the Ayatollah.
Yeah,
because I suggested you would be. You don't want America and Israel killed. You want it maimed at worst. Maybe.
Right. I'm a moderate.
You're a moderate.
I'm a moderate Ayatollah.
Well, but let's not like start giving women the right to vote or anything. That would get out of hand very quickly.
Yeah, that would be another form of extremism, obviously. Yeah.
Okay, so we're trying to make you the Ayatollah,
mm-hmm.
but you offended the president.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Somehow. And so now he's talking about declaring victory before... he's saying we already changed the regime. I don't see no Christian Britschke in charge of Iran yet. So it's not really regime change until you get to be the ruler.
Yeah, so I got to work for it.
You got to work for it. They're going to make you work for it. You're going to be like the Shah's family, reduced to making desperate appearances at CPAC. Did you see how pathetic CPAC was this year?
They loved this king in waiting.
Because it's all just Iranian dissidents. Like, that's the only people who showed up.
Have you seen any of these monarchical protesters around D.C.?
No.
Yeah, you see...
there's a rival pretender for the throne at this point for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's his name again?
Reza Pahlavi?
Yeah.
Or was the grandfather, I don't know. But that's the House of Pahlavi.
I think they had their chance.
Yeah.
I have ideas, you know? I have a lot of ideas. And I appreciate President Trump making me work for it a little bit. This mm-hmm. is something people misunderstand about Trump is... he actually, while he does enjoy a crowd of sycophants, he doesn't respect people who grovel, right?
That's true.
And so if you are in any way antagonistic to him, the way to get on his good side is not to just roll over, you know, like a supplicant.
Yeah.
You gotta show that you're worth your medal. This is why he likes Mamdani in mm-hmm. New York, because he kind of gives as good as he takes, mm-hmm. right? That's why he was like kind of, he was like, yeah, call me a fascist in the Oval Office. I respect that, right? And it's why he has nothing but contempt for European leaders.
I have nothing but contempt for European leaders.
Yeah.
I mean...
they just keep getting worse and worse, don't they?
Tell me what part of this is wrong. Like, we're in the NATO alliance.
Mm-hmm.
We pay for their defense.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, fight their wars on their behalf. You know, we just... they free ride on us. And then, like, I don't really...
we have graciously surrendered higher math and reading scores in order to place more tank divisions in their country.
Yeah, and then, look, I don't really agree with what's going on in Iran, the military intervention, but when we say it's go time, what right do they have to refuse? I mean, if Trump says, send your ships to the Strait of Hormuz, and they say, no, we're not doing that, why should we still be contributing a dime to NATO? Am I missing something? Like, they don't get to tell us no. I mean, you could say no, and then we're not... then we're just not in an alliance anymore,
right?
Yeah.
What am
I missing?
You're not missing anything. It's a real toxic relationship.
Yeah, there's just free riding then. If they don't have to do anything to help us or do everything we say, then why should we contribute anything to their defense? I don't care.
Right.
Then Russia's your problem.
Right.
Good luck.
I think the situation persists because on both sides, people kind of like the free riding. Obviously, Europe likes not having to pay for things, right? That's what their whole...
Or do anything.
Yeah, that's what their whole society is built on.
They like yawning and complaining. Oh, but we are late tired. We cannot...
Yeah. You know. Yeah, these, you know, a continent of people who work from 10 to 3-ish, you know. Right. Surprise, surprise. Don't like to do much. But then on the flip side, like, the hawks in America also like their dependence on us. Like an abusive boyfriend. They like the fact that... They are, you know, they're dependent on us to do things. Right? I mean, this is the whole idea of NATO in the first place, was that European armies couldn't function independently, right? That, and so, you know, in order to prevent another conflict in Europe from breaking out, but now it just means that we have to pay for everything.
Yeah.
So
I don't like it, and Americans don't like it, and. Anyway, we got to wrap this whole war up. It's not gonna. I mean, we can say, look, we blew up a lot of their stuff. Their stuff is blown up. That was successful. Declare victory. They say they're negotiating with some other figure. I don't know that it's this Mujtaba Khamenei.
Yeah.
Because he seems incapacitated.
Yeah.
And or
my
maybe
rival,
dead.
Yeah. I'm willing to negotiate, but the phone
you'd
is
negotiate.
Not ringing off the hook.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew Petty, our foreign policy writer here at Reason, who's great, and everyone should read his analysis, but he had a good piece last week talking about how this is a situation where Trump clearly is desperate for it to end. That's why he keeps, you know, facilitating between we're going to bomb the hell out of him again.
Right.
Oh, we're about to end the war. They're negotiating, right? He's clearly very desperate to wrap this thing up. And that's
markets
why
are like, yeah, we're almost done. Whoop!
Right.
Well, I don't know. It could be a couple more weeks. Whoop!
The problem, as Matthew Petty points out in his piece, is that really the only card Iran has right now is to make this war last as long as possible and be as costly as possible as a deterrent against future aggression, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we wrap this up pretty quickly and then we go back to, you know, the status quo of them, you know, reduced, from their perspective, what's to stop America from doing this again? I mean, they ran this exact playbook in 2025, right? We bomb their nuclear site. Iran strikes back in a very minimal way.
Pathetic.
Yeah.
We shot them all out of the sky.
Because they didn't want a wider conflict.
Right.
And they're like, okay, we won't fly completely off the handle. And that bought them a year before another giant war. And so their thinking right now is, unless we make this the worst possible thing that we can for the U.S. and our Gulf allies, then it's just going to happen again. So
they can always just do what we want.
We can't.
I don't know. They never quite figure that one out, but
well,
fine.
We can do what we want, but this is the thing. As Americans,
well, we can do what we want.
We can
they
do what we want.
They could do what we want, and then we could all be good.
Yeah, but that requires the entire regime just folding over and rolling over, and they're at the end of the day,
that.
Like, people who are in power are going to want to stay in power. Because there's no happy future for
if
them.
If I was in power, I would want to stay alive even more than I would want to be in power, I think. Maybe not.
Oh, absolutely. If I were some sort of, like, kleptocrat, you know, I would be...
I could be corruptly bought.
Elba? I would love to stay
an
in
island,
Elba.
Like, let's pick... I'd pick out a nicer island than that one, but... Yeah.
Well, Elba's okay, off the coast of Italy. You don't want to go to
Saint
Helena.
Saint Helena,
yeah.
Helena, that was the bad one.
Yes.
Elba was fine.
And even, actually, Saint Helena wouldn't have been terrible, except for the fact that I learned this recently... So Napoleon sent into exile
the
Elba,
second time.
Island off the coast of Italy.
To Helena.
Then he, you know, tries to retake France, St. Helena off the coast of Africa. And on the second island, for the most part, it's actually kind of like a dry, pleasant climate. But there, I guess there's like a little microclimate where there's just like a permanent storm cloud over it. And that's where they built Napoleon's house. So he had to live in a moldy old house for his final days.
Yeah.
So. And then he
died under mysterious circumstances, killed by Israel.
Yeah, right, Napoleon, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely killed by Israel.
Right, yeah. Yeah, all these people with islands, curious. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I wonder who else was visiting.
I
want a Polynesian island.
That'd be nice, yeah, Tahiti or...
something like that,
yeah.
Yeah.
That won't be so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I were a dictator and it was looking like it wasn't going to work out,
I would see the writing on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I would just see it.
It's like the Shah when he's, you know, kicked out of Iran, where does he wind up initially in this hemisphere? He's in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And he hates it. Foolish. I would love being
in
the Bahamas.
They just love power.
It's sad.
Seductive. The seduction of power.
Yeah.
It seduces.
The seductive seduction of power.
It's already taken hold of you, my friend. Just, you know.
I'm getting power hungry.
2 weeks of being the presumed Ayatollah.
I got ideas, you know. Yeah. We're gonna do occupational licensing reform. We're gonna do school choice.
Yeah.
Kind of end farm subsidies.
Okay. I'm liking the sound of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm liking the sound of this. We had so I was in Las Vegas this weekend, another desert kingdom.
Yeah.
with a different kind of religious fundamentalist there. No, nice people. I love Vegas, actually. We've spent some time in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. During a Freedom Fest, kind of conservative libertarian-ish gathering.
Yeah, this was just vacation. I saw Shin Lim, the magician.
Yeah, how was that?
Fucking amazing.
What is the appeal of...
so good.
What is the appeal of magic for you?
What is the appeal of magic? You asked that in such a pointed way, like you don't have any interest...
Well, I'm skeptical of witchcraft, and I don't like being tricked, you know?
Well, so this is not set up like it's real magic. You're just supposed to be amazed by... You know, it's like Penn and Teller stuff. It's like, it's not being presented to you as genuine magic. It's presented, which is obviously ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the impression, it's the... The trick is cool that he makes. This guy makes. He does his most impressive stuff is card magic, where he's just making cards appear. Like he'll be like, cards fly out everywhere. Like where are they? Like he. It's not in his sleeves. It's not where are they coming from. We have no idea. They've got a camera close up on his hands that you're watching on the monitor. I mean, you can see him on stage. You can watch the monitor. You can see it. It's just amazing where all these cards appear.
And you were impressed.
Genuinely amazed. And he also did. I guess I don't want to ruin the act for any... Well, it's not like he gives it away. If you're about to see Shin Lim or planning on it, don't watch this next part.
Spoilers.
For our millions of viewers. Hold on here. But he does basically the trick from The Prestige, where he appears in the audience despite being on stage like a second earlier. And I don't know if he's if he has a twin or if he's doing... electric cloning thing, and there's a clone of him dying in a water tank.
There's well, in Vegas they wouldn't have the water in order to drown. We need the water tank. And so.
But it's you think you're watching him. You are watching him at some point, and he's doing this close up magic, and then you realize you're no longer watching him. You're watching his assistant, and like where is he? Oh, he's sitting right next to me. Amazing! It's so cool.
Right.
It was great.
That's pretty impressive.
I had a great time.
You know, I am. I'm not a big magic person. I'm not a big theatrical person. But once you're actually in the seats watching big productions, it can actually be pretty impressive.
I like magic shows. I don't like – I'm not a big theater person.
No.
I don't really want to watch musicals necessarily that much. Like maybe a serious drama play, maybe some Shakespeare every now and then. It's not my favorite thing.
There was a good tweet. I don't know if you've been seeing the image going around on X of the woman at the No Kings protest dressed up as the Statue of Liberty getting arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And the comment was, first they came for the theater kids.
Yeah.
And I said, make sure to get them all. Get every theater kid.
Yeah, I don't. I was never a theater person. I really resent theater kid. I appreciate anti-theater kid hatred because... And also, they make everything about themselves. Like,
right.
There's so much of the theater is it's like, it's we're making a play. What should we make our play about?
A play.
Putting on a play. Right. Like, you don't have anything else, and you're so empty and dead inside that the only thing you can think to do on this stage is hold up a mirror.
Yeah. It's like it's the artistic version of the Land O'Lakes. Where it's like the woman is holding up a Land O'Lakes box with her on it. It's like, oh, how deep does it go?
Yes, it is.
At a
like
certain
that.
Point, you know, you turn 14 and decide this is not, this is not exciting.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. There's only a couple musicals I like. I like Les Mis. I would go see that.
You know, as a fan of the July Monarchy, I'm critical of Les Mis. But. No, I can appreciate on a technical level large, you know, live productions, but it's not really my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I like a good, you know, $20 at the door concert, bunch of drunks in the basement of a bar, you know.
Sure. I mean, I don't go to a lot of concerts. I'm not a big music guy. Just not for performances.
I was at an open music yeah. open mic music night last night. Very impressed, I gotta say. I'm always just very impressed with like the latent amount of musical talent out there.
People just show up and do music.
Yes, they show up. Yeah, a couple of friends of mine, they played guitar, ukulele, beautiful singing voices.
Wow.
Yeah. That's just, you know, that's like, it's not...
I don't have any musical talent whatsoever.
No.
I can't sing, I can't play an instrument.
I'll do a Johnny Cash impression at karaoke.
Oh, yeah?
That's about it, yeah.
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be fun to watch. What was I going to say? I forgot. Oh, I also don't like stand-up comedy at all. I'd rather suffer than watch it. Well, that's the same thing.
I do not. Yeah, no, I do not like going to stand-up comedy either. Because I like being funny and bantering.
You are
and so,
funny.
Yeah, and so they're taking the one thing I have away from me. Yeah, you can't compete with that.
Can't do that.
It's the worst possible date night, you know? Because then it's like, what am I going to do, you know, to impress this lady?
Oh. Jokes?
Yeah, I can't compete with that, right?
You take your lady to a comedy show? You'd never think of doing that?
Well, no, I would never, no. You know? Yeah. No.
Leave the joke, you know, stick to sports.
Yeah.
You're the expert.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the birthright citizenship case that's going on right now.
Yeah.
I was listening to some of the oral arguments today.
Yeah, give
it's
me
always
your...
fun listening to the justices question whoever. It doesn't sound – so this is the case to decide whether if you're born here, you're automatically a citizen. That would appear to be what the 14th Amendment says.
It seems
you're born here,
pretty clear.
Subject to the
jurisdiction
thereof, which is one of those slightly ambiguous phrases that the people who wrote constitutional amendments put in there just for fun, you know, just like well-regulated militia being necessary.
Well, what's the worst that could happen? I think the first part is pretty clear, but we'll throw that in there.
We'll just throw in a little ambiguous clause just to screw with people.
And the argument is now subject to the jurisdiction thereof cannot apply to the children of illegal immigrants, right? Because they're not subject to the jurisdiction thereof. They're subject to the jurisdiction of the country that they came from.
Well, right. And the best argument is if that's saying that, you know, obviously – even people who are here, you know, visiting foreign diplomats
who have diplomatic immunity,
right?
Yep.
If they gave birth here, their kids are not subject to the jurisdiction thereof of the United States, so they wouldn't be.
They
citizens.
Don't get citizens, and that's not controversial,
right? But they're still like they could be arrested if they ran someone over in a car. So it's like that doesn't really work so much
For actual immigrants,
yes.
Not foreign dignitaries,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the best argument against birthright citizenship is the one advanced by Richard Epstein, amongst other people, where he argues that, you know, citizenship is a benefit that you're claiming, and you can't have, like, legal rights to a benefit that you claimed illegally or by doing something illegally, right? So it's like the Constitution has all sorts of protections for property rights. But if I were to steal your home, then, you know, would you have to go eminent domain it from me, you know, go through the eminent domain process in order to reclaim it?
Right.
No, because I never had a valid claim to that.
And
home
if I left it to my descendants, they don't suddenly have a claim to it because I left it to them.
Right.
I obtained it illegally.
Right. It's a controversial argument, but it is probably the best argument I think you could make against birthright
citizenship. Well, I can understand the argument that when they wrote the 14th Amendment, when they considered these things in the 1800s, they were trying to deal with formerly enslaved people and their descendants, they were not, they wouldn't have comprehended the level and ease of migration that was to take place in future generations, right? Like now you could be about to give birth, you could get on a plane, you could appear here, you could get your kids, you know, you had to take a long boat voyage with some level of determination to be physically present in the United States in order to give birth and then have a child that inherits the benefits. And that is a circumstance they wouldn't have seen then.
Well,
that doesn't mean...
Oh, I guess on the flip side, though, is like, you know, you did, you know, post 14th Amendment, even before the 14th Amendment, have massive waves of immigration to the United States. You know, people were much more easily able to claim citizenship, although citizenship also came with fewer benefits.
But of people who were intending fully to reside here. Like,
yeah.
I was hearing, you know, this is, again, I think this is just what it says, is that people born here are citizens.
Yeah.
You may not like that, but if you don't like that, the way to remedy that has to be you rewrite
the Constitution.
The amendment, at the very least, Congress passes a law. Again, this was just Trump saying as an executive order, by the way, this is no longer the way it is, which that's obviously not going to stand up because that's not even you know, you can make the argument that it's left to the legislature to interpret some of these things and they could pass a law. You know, that would stand up maybe a little bit better. Trump just saying it, he doesn't like the way it is not going to stand up.
Right.
But again, Alito advancing maybe the best possible version of this on the other side, saying, you know, now you could just, again, foreign adversaries, like an Iranian national, a Chinese spy, a Russian, whatever, they can trivially, without any intent to immigrate here or be part of our country, mm-hmm. they can appear here within the physical space of the U.S. with unbelievable ease and have a child who then has all of the advantages of American citizenship in a way that would have been incomprehensible to people during the 1800s.
Yeah, and I mean, the pushback to that would, again, just be like the kind of textual analysis. It's like, well, you know, maybe, yeah, situations have changed, but the Constitution says what
right,
it says.
Which is exactly what John Roberts, and I think both Roberts and Kavanaugh said that's in response to John Sauer, whatever his name is, who's the Solicitor General. Mm-hmm. Both at some point said, look, you're trying to say this is inconvenient, basically, that you would want it to be a different way, but why is that relevant to our reading of what the Constitution says?
Right. Yeah. That's not a position.
I mean, that's the end.
That's not a position.
Especially if you're a originalist, as most people of a conservative framework.
I guess there's a distinction, which, you know, I'm probably going to butcher this, but between originalism and textualism, mm-hmm. right? Where originalism puts a lot more emphasis on
what we think they meant.
They think they meant versus
textualism
and
is literally what it
their
says.
Intent with using this language versus textualism. What does it actually just say on the page?
Right.
This is how Gorsuch, more of a textualist than a originalist, in the Bostock decision came to think that restrictions on restrictions on sex discrimination covered sexual orientation as well, because from a textualist perspective, it does, even if no one who wrote that law thought that was considering, you know, are we banning discrimination?
That's the way they wrote
couples.
It, so that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they lost the people who want to get rid of birthright citizenship side seem to lose Gorsuch's vote. You can listen to it happen in real time, because Gorsuch is actually very defensive of, protective of Native Americans and their rights.
Right.
And he asked if this would undo citizenship for Native Americans to some extent. And the Solicitor General screwed up big time. He should immediately said no. Or whatever, that he giving again a clear answer that Native Americans retain their rights, and he was like, "Oh,
big mistake,
big." That's not reading the room. Mm-mm. Not reading the room. So there would also be like, what are the practical?
He should have said, "I have reservations."
And heap big trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know what would be the practical consequences of suddenly saying that this couldn't be retroactive, right? To say that millions of, I mean, they would never do that. That
you would,
all
I mean,
these
there's
people who are given citizenship are no longer citizens. We can't even, we are, the Trump administration would like to deport a lot more illegal immigrants, people who are clearly illegal immigrants, and is struggling to do that given pushback at some of their enforcement mechanisms. What if you suddenly would have millions more people in this country? You're just adding to the number of illegal immigrants. You're not adding to your ability to get rid of them. You know?
Yeah. I mean, so this would be another argument for not changing birthright citizenship is what's described as like reliance interests, right? Or it's like, okay, you're changing the interpretation of the law, but I made decisions about my life based on what you used to say the law was. I've relied on it to do all these things, and now you're pulling the rug out from under me, right? Which is, you know, presents rule of law problems itself if you're just constantly changing judicial interpretations, right? So, but, you know, I mean, beyond, I guess, the technical constitutional issues, I think birthright citizenship is just like a very good thing to have. It's not common in the old world, right? Like European countries or whatever, Asian countries, many of them don't have birthright citizenship. It is very common here in the New World because we are countries of immigrants, right?
Yeah.
People, you know, whole societies have been built on people who moved here to elect to be part of your country. It's good because you avoid this problem of like Germany with like, you know, huge, you know, it's like Turkish immigrants, or Japan with like, you know, descendants of like Korean immigrants, where you just have huge populations in your country who, you know, this is their home, but they're not citizens. They're, you know, you have some you have a population of second class non-citizens, right?
Right. It can actually promote not assimilation. It can work against assimilation.
Right.
To have a substantial proportion of the people residing in the country and have them legally not considered citizens can actually worsen the exact problem that I know conservatives are trying to alleviate by going after.
Right.
This.
Well, I mean, this is the argument you hear from conservatives sometimes about illegal immigration.
Right.
It's like, oh, you're creating, this isn't something that's befitting a republic where we should mm-hmm. all have equal relationships to the state. Mm-hmm. Instead, you have a helot class of, you know, people with lesser rights because mm-hmm. they're illegal immigrants. And their solution is, you know, have more border security and deport illegal immigrants. But if you just take away millions of people's citizenship as well,
right.
you exacerbate that same problem.
Right. Without, if you're going to do the same level of immigration enforcement, then you're just adding to your illegal immigration
right,
problem
right.
if you just start taking away citizenship from people.
Right.
Seems
right.
like not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Another court decision that came out so this isn't a decision that came out at all. This is being debated. But they had a decision that I wondered what you made of, if you heard of it, it was 8-1 that came out yesterday.
Oh,
in this,
yes. The conversion therapy
right.
Case.
Right.
Describe for our loyal
which
listeners.
This is LGBTQ conversion therapy. But it's just – there's a lot of fear-mongering about it because this applies to talk therapy. And what they decided is that it is a First Amendment issue, that you can't have a law that says what a therapist can't talk to a questioning person about who's having sexuality or gender-based issues and can't push back on their self-realization, which makes – particularly no, and the reason the trans people or the advocates for transgender issues wanted to attach themselves to the LGBT the gay conversion therapy, because that's a very discredited practice that
mm-hmm.
does not work well. It's very people don't generally change their sexuality or get talked into changing their sexuality, but unlike that, for the gender side, it is somewhat more common, or still being debated. It's still very unsettled. There are people who, as young people, had what's called gender dysphoria and said they're the other gender or want to be the other gender,
mm-hmm.
and then stopped expressing that view later in life. And they did not do any kind of medical intervention, and their gender dysphoria ended. Which seems to me then that it would be very wrong to have a therapy option on the table that would push back on people's notion that they have gender dysphoria. It would be insane to make that illegal, but that's what Colorado tried to do.
Yeah, so the Colorado law, what it said is, I'm not going to get all the particulars right, but to paraphrase, it said that, you know, you can't have, you know, a therapist can't do something to, like, undercut someone's claimed gender identity,
right
when they're offering services to these people,
which is, that's crazy.
And the legal reason for why they struck this down as a First Amendment violation is, okay, so you're doing viewpoint discrimination, which is a big no-no in First Amendment jurisprudence, right? If you're a therapist saying, I'm going to affirm your gender identity, your claimed gender identity, then that's completely fine. But if you're going to say, oh, no, I'm going to work with you to affirm, you know, the gender identity of your biological sex, you're expressing a different viewpoint, and the Colorado law banned that and not the other.
Yeah.
Right?
8-1.
8-1. I actually do think – I mean, I think for like a hardcore libertarian, this isn't a particularly hard issue. But for people who are okay with licensing of therapists, which is effectively just regulating their speech, it actually is kind of hard.
Mm.
Because it is this question of like, well, you know, could you license – you know, when you're licensing therapists, could you tell them if someone comes in and says, I'm anorexic, the therapist can say, yes, you are too fat. Don't eat anything. Versus, you have body dysmorphia, you should be eating a healthy diet, right? I mean, those are different viewpoints you're expressing,
mm-hmm.
right? One is maybe more therapeutically valid than the other, right? And so if you think it's the state's role in licensing therapists to say you can have certain types of talk therapy and not other types as like best practices, then I think it actually is kind of a more difficult question of what kind of advice you can give to someone.
Doesn't that have to just lead you to then it should not be...
Yes, well, I mean, that's why I think the libertarian case that
right.
you can't license at a minimum professions that exist purely to just give people advice.
Right.
Yeah.
The speech nature of it puts it in the – I mean, even if it's a little bit more medical intervention-y than that, I – you know, a lot of this is so much of science and health is not totally settled or gets revisited, and I would be so wary of putting the thumb on the scales too hard. You know, every now and then you want to let doctors prescribe something crazy, figure out if we find out some novel use for some drug we already have, right? I mean,
yeah.
Like they were giving, I remember they were giving azithromycin for COVID. And I'm like, why is a drug that targets a bacteria ever going to work on a drug that targets a virus? But then there was some study that showed it was having some positive, you know, you don't discover those things unless you give some license, right, to have the doctor mess around.
Right.
And sometimes be a quack and sometimes be totally wrong. But
right, right. But see, we as libertarians are unbothered by this because we support the rights of the quacks.
Right.
Right. But people who think that medical practice and, you know,
should be determined by the state,
then,
yeah.
I think at least conservatives have a harder case here than,
yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. 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 It's interesting. So there was that, what else is going on? I wanted to talk about Kristi Noem's husband's giant, ginormous fake
boobs. About gender dysphoria.
Speaking of gender, well, no, this is so interesting. I'm going to say something very controversial. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I actually don't understand. Well, I guess we should say what the news is. I don't understand what the big deal is. So Kristi Noem's husband was outed by the Daily Mail, a trash publication in every sense of the word.
Yeah, a contemptible tabloid.
Yeah. Fuck them, by the way. Actually, I have more nasty things about them to say about them later in the show, but they're awful. Hate them. They had this expose on him. They found he has this kind of fetish where he wears these giant, he's like stuffs balloons in his shirt to look like this. I've never heard this term, bimbo something. I've literally never heard this term before. Yeah. And then he's chatting with these very surgically enhanced in some way Barbie doll looking women and sending them pictures of his giant fake boobs and whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, as sex scandals go, this is kind of not the craziest one. Everyone is making fun of him. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but they're acting. I mean, Donald Trump was like, I'm just really sorry for his family. Like, the family is reeling from this. He wasn't caught with child porn.
Yeah.
And Kristi Noem herself is carrying on, allegedly, but it's pretty well established and confirmed, an affair with her aide, Corey Lewandowski, which is, you know, from a, not that I care about any of this, but from like a moral standpoint, is worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What am I missing?
I actually feel like a bit of sympathy for this man, where it's like, I don't understand what the rules are anymore.
Yeah.
We've decided.
Well, you can't stuff balloons in your shirt and talk to these weird women on forums without the Daily Mail coming sniffing around.
Okay, so what are we allowed to cause people to feel shame for, right? You know, if it's, the standard is people's sexual practices is a private matter that isn't something that we should litigate publicly as an issue of public morality, provided that it's consensual. Where is people's claims to point and laugh at this man?
This
right?
is exactly what I was about to get at, because he is an object of mockery and scorn, and everyone is making fun of him because it is so ridiculous, these photos of him with these giant fake boobs, and he's an object of mockery. Because he is pretend, you know, he's in this costume of a woman.
I mean, it is ludicrous, but...
But if he were to say,
yeah,
I am a woman.
Right.
And this is my truth of who I am. And I am dressing as I internally believe myself to be. Mm-hmm. Then all the mockery would have to stop immediately.
But because this was some private practice of his, then it's open to ridicule and shame. And because it's not... He's not claiming some additional identity and right to ruin women's sports.
Doesn't that seem a little backwards?
Wouldn't
the idea that...
The more private it is, the more open to public shame and mockery it becomes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the more it's just a costume, it's just a sexual kink he has, you know, it's wants to be expressed in private, so then it's very funny.
Right.
But if he made it central to his identity and forced us all to participate in the fiction that he is actually a large-breasted woman, then it would need to be celebrated and he would be showered with awards for his courage.
He's a civil rights hero, you know?
And that's completely absurd.
Yeah, right, yeah.
We're the only two people who see how absurd this is.
Right, yeah. And it's
I don't know what to say.
I just find it. It's just I find it so cheap and kind of gross. Where yeah, these people who in every other context have no qualms about any sort of you know whatever sexual
right.
practice or gender
displays idea displays in public right
are so, once the second it's a political enemy are so eager
yes.
to you know point and laugh faggot you know
yes
right
like, yes
it's I just find it it's just it's a real cruel aspect of our culture and it's like people are
yeah.
just looking we have in theory very liberal norms about people's private sexual
right.
proclivities until it's something
right.
you can use for political advantage. And then
right.
all the scorn comes right back in.
Right. He could be on a parade float waving a pride flag saying, this is who I am. Accept me. And these same and I'm a Democrat. And these same people would all be cheering. But because and also there's some presumed hypocrisy. Like I was arguing about this with my coworker, Lindsay, today on Rising. And she's like, well, you know, it's just the speaks to the religious hypocrisy. I'm like, did he? He's not a televangelist, right? I mean, I don't know this guy that well, but does he is he constantly proclaiming that shoving balloons in your shirt is a moral evil? Then yes,
right.
it's a hypocrisy. But I don't know.
But also,
just
you
the transference
than...
of being a member of the Republican Party and that
yeah.
there are other religions in it is enough for me to say, oh, he's a hypocrite here.
And also, you, the critics now, are being hypocrites because
right.
in every other context, yeah, you think this is fine.
Right.
But now you're choosing to use shame. It's yeah. There's just such a bullying instinct here.
Yes.
Where it's like because you're doing this in private and therefore. Presumably have some shame about it, I'm going to exploit your shame, right? And I just find that I find that really unfortunate.
Right.
Yeah, once you...
His wife is taken up with another man.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
And I look, like, is this a good way to be a husband to your wife? No,
no.
I don't think so, but...
Well, I don't know who started... I don't care. Like, their marriage is not
like,
my problem,
it seems like it's Christy Gnome's problem.
Right.
It's a problem for the gnomes to sort out.
Right.
It's not something the Daily Mail...
Again, if anyone was shoving this all in our face, she was flying all over the country with Corey Lewandowski. She was working with him. She... Again, it's not explicitly confirmed, but I mean, the Daily Mail has, I think, reported the same information about that it is... the affair is confirmed. So... She's the one taking him around everywhere. This was going on in private.
Yeah. It's, you know, to give maybe a less contra... I just think that this is an instant... Once you find this instinct in yourself to point and laugh at
uh-huh.
someone, you should question it because it's normally a bad thing. Right?
You invite us to search your search history.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I was kind of thinking about this with... this is a few weeks old now, but... you know when Chapel Roan had the controversy of like
what did she punch someone or did she
no,
what did
she didn't
do?
Actually punch someone
I don't know what happened. All I saw was the memes about like of like people battered and bruised and like this is how Chapel Roan tweeted
so
me.
What happened I think all parties mm-hmm. more or less confirmed the details. She was in a hotel restaurant. There was some other family there, like Brazilian soccer player family. She's there in Brazil. The kid of the soccer player's family walks by her table to like, you know, confirm it is Chapel Roan and like looks at her and is starstruck. Then her security guard goes over and is like, hey, back off. Right?
I love
and so
that.
Then everyone's yelling at Chapel Roan for like, ha, you know, you're mean to kids and
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. And like, she's annoying. And so like, it was kind of fun watching the memes, but at the same time, I'm like, am I bad for, you know, wanting to mock and make Chapel Roan feel bad, right?
Which one is Chapel Roan?
She does Pink Pony Club.
Yeah, well, I've definitely heard that song. Okay. I get her confused with, I think, Sabrina Carpenter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of this girl pop.
I can't tell any of these people apart anymore.
But yeah, I just think it's generally a contemptible...
Pink Pony Club.
Yeah, we'll play a clip. No,
yeah.
I can't actually do that. That would cost us millions of dollars.
Okay.
Also, accusations of hypocrisy, or like hypocrisy is like the ultimate Trump card, do less and less for me for a couple reasons.
They don't do anything for anyone else. No one cares.
Well, people love to. It's like the one thing you can get on someone is like, you're not following your own values, right? But everyone is a hypocrite because if you have any moral standards at all, you're going to fall short of them,
right?
And so it's just this idea, it's like, oh, when someone else is in the spotlight for doing this thing that we all do, then I'm going to be a, you know, a bully. But hopefully the spotlight never falls on me.
Hopefully.
So, yeah.
Well.
So I Brian Noem, I have some sympathy for you.
I'm sorry. The family is devastated by this. Again, it's not fucking child porn. It's not. He's not a murderer. He's not.
Right. If he had,
going to prison.
If he had left his wife to take up with another man under his new gender identity, we would be celebrating him.
Yeah, but I don't get it.
Yeah,
I just don't get it. Well, good luck to them, and I hope they stop being the main character.
Yeah, and I have no love for Kristi Noem whatsoever at all.
No, I think she was not a good Homeland Security secretary at all. And even the one good thing she did hardly seems to matter when I had to the shoe. She said the shoes, you don't have to take your shoes off in TSA.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
Oh no!
Here I was making my way through security, airport security for my trip this weekend, and they say you can leave your shoes on. I say, well,
yeah,
I'll be a monkey's uncle. I don't know. I go through the porno scanners. Mm. They say, oh, your shoes did set it off. You have to go back and take them off.
Yeah. Same things happen to me. Yeah. So I wear these boots sometimes through airport security.
I was wearing very normal tennis shoes, like just very standard Nike or New Balance. What is it? Nike. Just normal Nike shoes, and they set it off, and I had to go back. Mm-hmm. And that made me quite furious.
What's the worst TSA experience you've ever had?
I've been fondled by them way too many times. Mm-hmm. I realized there was a pair of pants I was wearing that just makes them think I have, like, a gun in my crotch or something, and it's an aggressive pat-down they give you when they decide there's something in your crotch. It is not fun.
Yeah.
I don't know what the worst – just waiting forever. No, the absolute worst I had, but that was totally my fault. I left my backpack in airport security. Totally my fault. And I didn't realize – I was at Dulles, and I didn't realize I'd left it until I got to the – I was late. I was late for this flight to San Diego or to L.A., and so I was rushing. I left my backpack with my laptop in it at airport security. Made it to the end of the gate at Dulles. Then is when I realized I'd left it behind. So at that point, I was going to turn back for it. So I canceled the flight because I was going to miss the flight. I booked a later flight. I went back to get it, already gone. They had already put it in the secure room, that backpack had my laptop and my car. I had driven to the airport and parked there. It had my car keys in it. So I actually ended up going on the trip anyway, and I was able to get it back. Fine, a few days later. So it worked out fine, but that was my own fault. Nobody's fault but mine. What about you?
I've also gotten the intensive genital pat down before. It's always weird because they ask you, I was like, well, do you want to go to like a private room?
Right.
I'm like, no, this is not a special moment between us.
Do you want to step into something more comfortable?
I want the world to see, you know,
what
you have elected to do.
Your sick sexual fetishes aren't getting you canceled for some reason, Mr. TSA agent.
No, I think the worst actually was... I was going through TSA, and I was right behind me was must have been like a air marshal or a police officer traveling with a pair of handcuffs, right? And so they pull over his stuff, you know, to like go through. It's like handcuffs. It's flag something, right? And he's getting really mad at the TSA agents, you know, yelling at them. They're getting mad at him because he's showing some attitude. But the problem is my shoe had fallen off into his bin. And so now I am tied to this situation. The resolution of me getting my shoe back depends on this guy calming down, which as a, you know, police officer dealing with what he considers lesser law enforcement is not going to happen.
That's not good.
And so, yeah, it was very dicey. Eventually, one of the TSA officers did take mercy on me and just gave me my shoe. But I was very worried that it was like, he's going to get pulled into the back room and I'm just going to be like, well, do I get on this flight with one shoe?
With one shoe?
Yeah.
Actually, I had one other bad one that I won't say who this involved. It involved two female at the time employees of Reason. The three of us were flying back to DC and they decided to smoke a lot of marijuana before we left for the airport and then manifested a great deal of confusion and paranoia as we were going through security that got us almost to I was like, just be cool, it's fine, and they could not be cool.
Oh boy.
I won't say who that was, but it was it fell to me to manage to keep the peace there.
Be the trip sitter, yes, as they call them.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's no good.
That was not good. I was wanting
to... On the flip side, though, you know, I've accidentally, like, back in my weed-smoking days, I once, like, went through TSA with, like, I left in my jacket, bag of weed in my pocket. Nothing, you know? They didn't catch that.
No. Oh, but they catch my hairspray every time. You know, well, my better half insisted that we... Because he doesn't like to spend money unnecessarily. He's very thrifty, very frugal. So he was like, we're just going for the weekend. Let's each just bring a small bag... suitcase, no checked luggage, because it costs like $35. Mm-hmm. But then I end up buying $35 worth of the smaller toothpaste and the smaller shaving cream and the smaller hairspray. And it's like, why not just check it if we're doing that?
You know what the trick is? You know what I've done? Is I've just ordered on Amazon like a bunch of travel mouthwashes and toothpaste or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I just make sure to grab those when I travel.
Mm-hmm. I just got to rebuy them every, I don't know, they disappear in the apartment. You got to rebuy them every time. You sit upon a throne of extra travel size mouthwash. Good for you, sir.
Yeah, I do.
I wanted to talk about people and like in proximity to you as a commuter.
Okay.
So bear with me for this.
Okay, I got time.
This happens to me frequently. Well, I'll pass. You know, I'm on my scooter. And I try to be in the street or in the bike lane, but there are, every now and then you just have to be on the sidewalk. It's too, there's not a bike lane. The street is too crazy. And, you know, I try not to zoom right past something, you know, right next to them, spook people. But I'm sorry. I'm sick of being yelled at by people who are looking at their phone, listening to music in their loud music in their headphones, and then like, oh, you surprised me.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
It's kind of your fault.
You're not looking at the street. You're not looking where you're going, and you've covered your ears.
Yeah.
The ears are the eyes of the side of the face. This is preposterous. Like, you have no awareness of what's going on, and it's my fault?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's very frustrating here in D.C. because obviously a tourist destination as well, and people come, you know, God bless them, people come from elsewhere.
Look where you're going. It's not my fault.
And they're completely oblivious of how to navigate a walkable urban environment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They are a family of four stretched out across the entire sidewalk.
Oh, God.
They're coming out of doors right into the side. You know, if you're a jogger, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just have no awareness of their surroundings. And it causes, you know, you have to run into traffic or whatever else. Yeah, no, it's absolutely terrible. Yeah, I love walking around, running, listening to music. It's great. A massive downside, which I can see, you know, I'm part of the problem sometimes, is people have no awareness of their surroundings and bump into people and are,
especially when you do the double of listening to something and you're looking at your phone.
Yeah.
I don't know what you expect to happen.
It's dangerous.
You have to do one, you have to pick one or the other there.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just have to, you know, admit that sometimes you're not going to see that a scooter just went past you, and if it startles you, that's your fault.
Yeah. Am I suggesting there should be a law to fix this? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You know.
No, it's out of
those control. Are the people who don't deserve citizenship.
Yeah.
Go be a citizen of some other country then. Some country where they don't have ears or eyes or whatever, you know? See how you like it.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah. What would you strip people of their citizenship for if you could?
That would lose your citizenship. You know, supporting taxes in any way, shape, or form, out of here, gone.
Boom. Back to Britain.
Taking too long in checkout aisles, gone.
Yeah.
Right. Standing, just commuting related ones, standing in the moving walk platform.
Oh.
On the walk side, or standing as a couple.
Yep.
As a barrier.
Yep. Yeah. I'm happy you found love, but come on.
Yeah.
We the rest of us got places to be.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy South America.
Yeah.
Wherever we're going to send you to.
You know what? You know what I would strip people of their citizenship for? Is people who attempt to show you any sort of video that's longer than like 10 seconds.
Very much so.
It's like, oh, you got to watch this. This is so funny. Oh, it's 4 minutes long.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm going to be staring at your phone while you look at me waiting for me to laugh sufficiently.
Yes, that everyone hates that. Yeah, can't
and
do
yet
that.
It persists.
Yeah,
well, it's because there's no laws against it. Yeah.
Well, this is why just sharing with people at their leisure, you know, the short little reels and snaps and TikToks and whatever the fuck is great. It's better.
Yes.
I can, that at my own leisure, I can peruse these little, little morsels, not a 4-minute comedy routine that's oh so funny, but a little 30-second nugget that I will laugh at. And if I don't laugh, I don't have to like it, but usually I will laugh at it and I'll just get a little heart and that's better.
Yep.
That, see, social media is not so bad. That's a improvement.
It relieves us. It relieves us.
It relieves
of this,
us.
Of this responsibility.
I saw. We should talk about this. I saw the stupidest tweet ever today from someone I like. He's an Atlantic writer. Let me pull this up here. Let's do some. Okay, I was tweeting a lot today. Where did it go? Oh, maybe it was a reply. He was saying that
all you like. I need to get you a COVID mask.
He was saying that all the moral panics about technology in the past have been proven to be correct. And I was like, video games? That one is definitely not correct, right? And he was like, no, it is. Oh, here it is. Okay, so he tweeted that all the...
Who is the writer?
Tyler Austin Harper.
Okay, yeah.
He said all these technological moral panics were correct. He's quote tweeting a tweet that says, when I was a kid, people said television was eroding society. We had, same for video games, smartphones, social media, now AI. You know, saying that... An argument I make all the time that, no, you think social media is so bad or AI is going to be so bad. They said that about video games. They said that about television. They said that about radio. They said, you know. He's like, well, all of those things did... The moral panickers were correct. So I was like, well, what is your, in what sense was the moral panic? Let's just pick the video games one. How was the moral panic about video games correct? And he said, well, I think if you told H.G. Wells or Aldous Huxley in 1926 that 100 years from now, significant percentages of men will spend most of their non-working hours glued to violent simulations, they'd rightly have understood you to be describing a technological dystopia. Like... Okay, so yes, more people spend their free time glued to violence simulators, but and fewer people spend their time engaged in actual violence.
Yeah,
would be my count. Like,
yeah,
they would be sad about that. But then when I would say, but we've had no corresponding uptick in actual violence, and in fact, like violence as a way that men, particularly young men, spend their time would decrease markedly over this same period.
Right.
Fewer men would die violently. Like, these violent video, like Call of Duty is a World War II simulation. They actually went through World War II time period. Right. There were people actually going out shooting each other all the time.
Yeah, I mean, this is true.
So this is nonsense.
It's true if you just forget what the moral panic was actually about and then just, like, transpose what today's moral panic about technology is.
The moral panic was this was going to turn all the kids into school shooters.
Right, and it didn't do that at all.
No.
No, quite the opposite.
Yes.
Yeah, probably caused fewer of them to be school shooters.
That is actually what some of the research suggests. Yeah.
Right.
If I was worried that somebody was going to shoot up a school, I would give them video games. this instead.
Right. Yeah. No, that's ludicrous. Also, I don't know. I spent time glued to the violent fantasies of Aldous Huxley reading Brave New World,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Book with a this mescaline addict. I don't know if he would be exactly the person I would want to diagnose modern society. I mean, I don't know. I really do like the book Brave New World, but like it's kind of it has like a masochistic message ultimately, right? It's like people are going to become, you know, obsessed with pleasure seeking. And like the solution is to, what's the one, John the Savage?
Right. I've never actually read Brave New World.
Yeah.
I know I'm familiar with it. I've read like the Wikipedia page and that's awful to admit, but.
Right. I mean, his solution is like, you should just like go live as a recluse and whip yourself. And it's like, okay. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't see, so you're not a big fan of that book.
No, I am. I do. There is a certain really perceptive critique of kind of utilitarianism in it, where
it's kind of anti-consumerist.
It's very anti-consumerist, but something that I thought was really smart about it is
and we're for consumption.
Consumption is fine.
Yeah.
So there's in the book, there's like everyone is just like taking this drug Soma all the time to not have real feelings and just be high, right? And then also the other so that's dystopia aspect number one. Dystopia aspect number two is that there's like, it's a eugenics dystopia as well. So there's like the alphas or whatever, which are like the leaders of society, then all the way down to basically just like these monkeys who, mm-hmm. you know, turn the cranks in the factories and then take the drugs to feel good, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that there is something smart about if you just turn the human experience over to seeking pleasure, nothing else, then you can kind of get into eugenics where people are just, if they're just instruments of pleasure, then it's, you know, fine to dispense with them if they're not, mm-hmm. you know, or it's fine to control them via, you mm-hmm. know, drugs or it, you know, to, yeah, things like yeah. that. Yeah. So I think that actually is kind of smart. But
the utility monster.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, right. Yeah, if there's no such thing as, like, people don't have, like, dignity, you know? Yeah. You're just a pleasure-seeking bot.
But does that always come from a very narrow conception of what even constitutes pleasure? Like, people's pleasure could be being shown dignity and having a fulfillment, a fulfilling, you know, not in a very narrow, like, I'm having yeah. cocaine or porn or whatever, it like, literally wired into my brain.
Yeah,
but what if there is a greater pleasure coming yeah. from shutting down those things at least some of the time?
You yeah, know what I mean? So that would be yeah for sure. No, I completely agree with that. I think it's a good critique of utilitarianism narrowly conceived. Like mm-hmm. life is just about maximizing utils, right?
Right.
But even like a Thomas Aquinas or like the Christian perspective would be, well, humans are geared to seek happiness, right? Yes. But true happiness would come from a more elaborate description of the good life, you right. know, that you would find through religion or whatever else, right? Right? So I wouldn't describe that as utilitarianism. And it, you know, in some ways right. is, you know, obviously consider some pleasure-seeking, you know, as anathema to the good life.
Like, right? I enjoy playing video games a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy playing video games. If I have nothing else to do, I love to just sit down, play my Nintendo Switch. I'm replaying the Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Legend of Zelda game, the open world Switch Zelda game. It's not even my favorite game, but you can spend hours and hours and hours exploring the world, just collecting stuff, doing stuff. It's a very, you can spend 5 hours playing this. And I did. On the plane flight to Vegas, didn't look up the entire time, just played my Switch. Got to the hotel room late, did a couple things. And then it wasn't going to go out that night. Also, then just, like, played 2 more hours of it. I played an insane amount of video games. But after 7 straight hours of The Legend of Zelda, I didn't want to do it anymore. I, mm-hmm. like, even though this is the thing that gives me, like, the most pleasure, or this is, it just hits an expiration point eventually. I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather do nothing than do this now.
Right, no.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times people are just dismissive of things that they don't enjoy and so assume it's a waste of someone else's time,
exactly.
right? So long as, like, the thing itself is fine, right?
Right.
Then it's...
Particularly
if
the thing itself doesn't have many third-party harms, right? The government, if we accept the existence of government and the government can do some restrictions on our rights... Dicey proposal already, but if we're accepting that, it is to mitigate the harms to others,
mm-hmm.
not really to yourself, at least from a libertarian thinking, right?
Yeah.
If you really enjoy, again, I was in Vegas this weekend. I don't enjoy gambling at all. I tried it. I put $20 in the slot machine. About approximately 15 seconds later, I had $0.
Mm-hmm.
My husband did the same thing. Like, I don't get it. This was not fun. But clearly other people are enjoying it. They're enjoying losing all their money. I don't understand what I genuinely don't understand what can be fun about this. I can kind of see what's fun about, like, blackjack and poker, certainly. Mm-hmm. But just putting the money in the machine, pressing the button a bunch of times until you have no yeah. money, I don't get it even a little bit. But you know what? I don't care.
Yeah.
It doesn't harm me at all. Maybe it harms you. It's your money, man.
Well, I think this is also kind of the problem of, like, taking, like, too social science-y of a, you know, approach to
right.
these questions. We can have good, robust debates about what the good life means, right?
Yeah.
What it means to be a, you know, full realized person.
Right.
But if you're going to try to convince me, like, oh, people shouldn't play video games because of what this study said or whatever
right.
else, like, I'm going to be unconvinced. I don't think the data isn't going to tell me anything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. If I spent the $20 on a new Switch game, if I spent the $20 on a hamburger, if I just set the $20 on fire because that's pleasing to me for – like, what is the difference at the end? It's
right.
just what I want to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to construct some very –
Well, it's like people
elaborate... –
yeah, I feel like people have this contradictory perspective where it's like, okay, you generally think that, like, the purpose of life is to do the things that you enjoy,
right?
But then with no other moral foundation – but then you are skeptical of the way that some people enjoy themselves. And so I have to come up with other reasons, elaborate reasons manufactured in the data to find that why people are playing video games or smoking weed.
It's harmful to society.
Harmful for just society, you know.
And like young men used to be sitting around just contemplating philosophy. Now, they used to like sit around, like set the neighborhood cat on fire. Right. Like,
which is a blast.
It's so much fun. Let's hunt people. We should be hunting people for sport in our spare time. Mm-hmm. Not just animals, people.
Yeah.
That's what we should do.
Yeah.
And that is what they did. Mm-hmm. There was an incredible amount of just violence taking place in the society. Well, speaking of that, though, there's going to be more here in D.C. You know, the youth curfew is
It's expiring.
In Navy.
This is something you're a squish on, right? You don't like the youths running around.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel? Come on. Let out your inner authoritarian. How do you feel about curfews?
I mean, I'm against them, but there are a lot of youths running around.
It's
not good.
Okay, so I'm against curfews. Yeah. I will say.
But you don't live in my neighborhood.
I don't live in Navy Yard.
Yeah.
I do live.
Live in a probably less safe neighborhood that doesn't have this problem though.
Yeah, well, I do
gangs
live near
of marauding teenagers.
Yeah, I do live near U Street, which is a bar district that had a youth curfew, and also like. That's, I think, the best case you can make for some of these youth curfews is, like, why are a bunch of 16-year-olds hanging out outside of bars they're not legally allowed to be in at 2 in the morning?
I mean, U Street has a lot of people out at night.
Yeah.
People including myself.
Just,
like, tons of people. That I don't really see an argument for a curfew because there's just so many bodies anyway. I mean, I guess the argument is that the teenagers are going to be the ones doing the bad, but there's just so many people.
There's been
anyway.
Some youth crime, yeah.
But I don't know.
Regardless, it's a public street, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the parents can tell the kids to come home. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, if we privatized everything, then the U Street, you know, privatized corporation.
Sure.
Set
That's
an age
the way
limit,
it should
you know?
Be. That's the way it should be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It should be a private, they've taken the metro. Should be a private, metro system, and then they could just restrict people under a certain age or people whose grades aren't high enough.
Oh, yeah. Maybe about stay home that. And study.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you studied well, then you can go out and, you know, party and...
I'm sorry, there's no library on the Orange Line.
I'm going to...
Got to show
I'm,
your
I'm,
report
I'm,
card to the
yeah,
National
to the
Guardsman.
Officer, yeah. You know. Oh, good job. And he puts you a star. on your report card?
The city is yours. Yeah.
Navy Yard is yours. Do as you please. Nothing will stop you. I mean, that's what the city council said over Muriel Bowser's objection.
Mm-hmm.
Muriel Bowser said, please keep this thing in place. Yeah. And the city council said, no.
We're going to miss her when she's gone. Because the socialist is going to win
queen.
Now.
Yeah. It's going to get so bad.
Yeah.
I miss her already.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I had on my list for today. Oh, I wasn't done bashing the Daily Mail. A trash publication that had the following headline the other day. I'm consulting Twitter a lot here. Where was it? Oh, ready for this? Mm-hmm. Bullet used to kill Charlie Kirk not match rifle allegedly used by suspect Tyler Robinson.
Right.
New court filing claims. So Candace Owens retweeted that. Aha!
Got him! Yeah.
Of course, just because the bullet... The bullet shattered when it entered and killed Charlie Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bullet fragment they're using. It is inconclusive whether it matches the rifle.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's, like, doesn't match.
Right.
It just means it's inconclusive.
Yep.
That's all that means.
Right.
That is the argument the defense is making. That's a filing from the defense. Their job is to point out things favorable to their client. What's not favorable to their client is that his boyfriend person, friend, that he confessed to,
Brian
his
Nelm.
Father,
yeah.
who he also confessed to, are testifying for the prosecution.
Yeah.
Like, that's that people go, why are you so certain it's him? Because he wrote an explanation of why he did it.
Wrote it down.
And when his father said, I saw you on the surveillance video, that's you, did you kill Charlie Kirk? He said, yes. Or so the father's going to tell us. Maybe the father's lying. Seems to have no reason to lie to me. And maybe the ex-lover's lying, even though he wrote the letter to him. But okay, Candace, you can point to this just ridiculously sloppy Daily Mail headline from a trash publication.
Yeah, I remember I have mixed feelings about the Daily Mail because, you know, one of my good stories from back in the day, back during the Straw Wars, was if you remember, Starbucks had their strawless lid that they came out with, and I weighed it. And then I weighed the old lid straw combo, and the new lid weighed more. So it's like they're using more plastic by getting rid of the straws.
Oh, that was a good one.
But the Daily Mail wrote it up, featuring me prominently, and so I like that. But what I didn't like,
they post any shirtless photos of you, or
no, they didn't. No, probably for the best.
Man, the but, giant fake boob photos.
No, what I didn't like about their coverage is they framed it as like little boy's science experiment. You know, discovers you know, Starbucks
oh, golly
is using
gee.
More.
Yeah, right. You're a professional.
Yeah, fucking Encyclopedia Brown.
Oh, yeah. That's so fun. Gee Willikers. Yeah, right. You've got like a hat with like the spinning yeah. like Tweedledee hat or something.
Yeah. Oh. So that I didn't like.
Did they confuse you with the kid who caused all the straw problems in the first place? Remember, you exposed that the study about there being 8 gazillion trillion bajillion pounds of straws in the ocean was done by a 9-year-old who just called a couple people for a science project or something, and it's not true at all.
No, they didn't confuse me with him. Maybe they confused me with James Taylorico, the 12-year-old running for Texas.
That dope. That loser.
We don't got to belabor that point. But,
I don't want to see what he's searching.
Yeah. It is funny the differences in cultural status of journalists between America and the UK. Mm-hmm. So like Daily Mail is a British publication.
Mm-hmm. British trash publication.
Mid-market, in America, you know, journalists, while our reputation has taken a beating in recent years, still has a sort of like we're brave truth tellers holding the powerful to account, all the president's men, Bob Woodward, you know, undercover in Watergate kind of reputation. Whereas in the UK, the default assumption is that if you're a journalist, you're digging through people's trash and looking through their windows, trying to find the slimmest amount of dirt you can to trash someone in your rag.
Yes, that you're an alcoholic, even beyond what we are all in DC as alcoholics.
And clearly, the Daily Mail is living up to that reputation every day.
Yeah, you're lurking in the sewer grating so you can take upskirt photos of celebrities and like that's what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's the journalism over there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, real sick stuff.
Real sick stuff.
It's wrong.
Ugh.
They terrible publication. Hate them.
Yeah.
We're good journalists.
That's right.
We do good work.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. I can't believe no one ever offers to tip me as a journalist, you know? I cover
someone.
You don't
think it's for our service.
No. Yeah. Never
Why
once.
Is that?
Never once, you know? I've served. I've been on the front lines.
The front lines of Pakistan.
You know, the war is over for some people eventually. Never for us.
Yeah. No, I can't even say people have never thanked me. People see me sometimes and they know me from Rising or from Reason and they say, oh, I like you. I like what you do. Love your show. Like, that does happen to me and it feels nice.
No,
so I can't complain.
Sometimes it does happen. Anytime someone ever says that in like an interview or whatever, it's like, oh, thanks for covering that. I just get the Arnold Schwarzenegger quote in my head. I'm just doing my job.
There was a headline about the Schwarzenegger, the bastard child looks so much like him and just took up... weightlifting or whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. It's the one he banged the housekeeper.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that one is like the Jon Snow of the situation. And he's really strong.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's just born with it.
Just born with it. Yeah.
Is he juicing like his old man?
Oh, I don't know. I don't follow. Do you follow weightlifting at all?
No, like, not as a sport. And I certainly don't follow bodybuilding, which is. No offense, it's gay. Because, so there's like weightlifting competitions, powerlifting, where the goal is to lift as much weight as possible.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that's a feat of strength.
Right.
It's a
sport.
This is
like to admire the male form.
Yeah, bodybuilding is all about, every bodybuilding competition is just like how good you look flexing.
But they look weird.
They look grotesque.
Right.
And then secondly, because the goal is to like make every single muscle you have bulge as much as possible, you do a bunch of exercises that actually like, don't diminish, not diminish your strength, but don't make you as strong as if you were just doing, being a power lifter, mm-hmm. doing deadlifts and squats, mm-hmm. right? So bodybuilders are actually, like, despite their bulk, are weaker than power
lifters. Paper tigers.
Yeah, yeah, a paper tiger. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't follow weightlifting. Mm-hmm. I am impressed by public figures who can lift a lot of weight.
Like RFK Jr.?
Well, I mean, for a man of his age, no, and Pete Hegseth I'm actually very critical of because he also is just doing everything for show, mm-hmm. right? His, like, pull-up challenge, his form is terrible, mm-hmm. and, you know, you compare that to, you know, on the Republican side, Mark Wayne Mullen, you know, he's he can bench, like, 330,
really?
Something like that. Jamal Bowman, that's we're never going to see his like again. He, when he was running for re-election, he there was a video of him with terrible form, just like repping out like 405.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which that's very difficult to do. And he doesn't
He was deadlifting 405?
Not deadlifting, benching.
That's
yeah.
a lot of weight.
That's an incredible amount of weight. And like he's a big guy, but he doesn't look like jacked, right?
Yeah.
I would have voted for him because of that alone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard.
It's hard. It's tough.
Good for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who else is physically fit in Congress?
Fewer and fewer.
Fewer and fewer.
What's the one guy? I don't remember. I don't know if he's actually still in Congress. Mike Rogers from Wisconsin. He was his idea. He was the original person to have the idea of having pull-up bars in the airports.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. Paul Ryan, obviously, CrossFitter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Paul Ryan did some CrossFitting.
I love that. Do you remember back when, you know, Tea Party was a big thing? He was new speaker. And or maybe it was his vice presidential candidate. And he did some interview where they asked him, like, what kind of music do you like to listen to while working out? And he's like, Rage Against the Machine, this communist rock band. That's all about how, like, NAFTA is, you know, destroying the country.
We didn't deserve him.
And, yeah, like, Tom Morello, the guitarist for Rage Against the Machine, which is a band that I really like, came out and was just, like, so mad that Paul Ryan is like, oh, can't wait to go reform Medicare. Listening to his songs. Yeah.
Good night, Sweet Prince. He tried so hard to reform that fucker.
He really, that was back when people actually cared about, like, the big.
Do you remember arguing about health, like the Obamacare debates, which were grounded in
policy?
Like, policy?
Questions about debt and obligations.
Now we're languishing under total boomer luxury communism, which is officially a term that has entered our lexicon now.
Yes, right.
Because we didn't let Paul Ryan fix this, and Trump did not help at all because he ran in the other direction from this one.
And now we're never going to fix it.
And now we're never going to fix it, and now old people are hoarding all of the wealth,
mm-hmm.
and our taxes pay for them to take golf lessons,
yep.
and they'll never let it go. And they want to retire at like 55. That's what they're trying to have accomplished.
And in order to support this, eventually we're just going to have like 20% inflation. And
It's bad. Did you see the movie Weapons?
No, I didn't.
It was good, very good. And my sneaky in like interpretation, I think it's a sneakily conservative movie, like a lot of those movies, like Parasite. I argued that. Did you see that one?
Mm-hmm.
That Academy Award winning.
What's a movie?
That one is also about. Okay, I won't get into that. Mm-hmm. Good movie. This one is also conservative, in that. So these kids go missing, and spoilers: there's an evil witch woman. Mm. Is the twist in the thing? She's brainwashing the kids. She's like feeding off the kids' energy.
It's sneakily conservative because the evil witch woman is Hillary Clinton.
No, she represents old people and how they are. She's the Medicare system, the entitlement system benefiting the elderly. Because the film never, like, so many people just give her the benefit of the doubt because we're trained not to see elderly people as villainous. We're trained to see them as, you're supposed to help the elderly. You should go out of your way to do nice things for them. You should treat them with respect. So even though she is just a cancer on the characters of this movie, just tormenting them, it doesn't almost even like occur to it's just the natural state of affairs that we must all sacrifice to keep this evil figure, this demonic figure alive at all costs, even at paying all costs. And I don't think they intended it that way, but I found it such a subversive criticism of our entitlement system.
Okay. I'll have to watch it.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I liked it. It was a good movie. I don't usually go for horror type things. It was good.
No, I'm not a huge horror fan myself.
I don't really like gross out horror.
Gore I have a problem with.
I don't have a problem with it. I just don't. It doesn't. I'm not excited to go see it.
Yeah. The one exception, I do really like, have you ever seen the movie Green Room?
I think I saw the first part of that. That's the one, Patrick Stewart.
You would like that one. So I love Patrick Stewart already from, Star Trek. But also the movie is about a punk band that witnesses a murder in a neo-Nazi club in Green Room because they, get trapped in the Green Room and they have to, try to get out of there.
Right.
But I just love it because it's, set in Oregon, right? Mm-hmm. And I spent many happy years traveling the backwoods of Oregon listening to punk and metal music. And
so murdering people and consorting with white nationalists.
It is funny. I get, a little bit of, nostalgic glee watching neo-Nazis face off against this punk band and people die horribly. Because I'm like, oh, this reminds me of better times. So
I like a good ghost supernatural type thing every now and then. I love the movie... came out when I was a kid. I thought it was so scary. The Others with Nicole Kidman.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm.
That was a good one. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature. What Lies Beneath. I could go for those types of scary movies. I didn't watch any of the Scream movies. Slasher movies don't really.
I've seen Scream 7, the most recent one.
Did it make any sense absent the context and the doesn't matter?
I mean, it's not that smart, and so I feel like I was able to keep up with it. I don't know if I had seen the previous ones, because Scream 1, I saw the first 30 minutes of the first Scream, and the first Scream is kind of a commentary on slasher movies, but by Scream 7, Scream is just a commentary
it
on
is,
Scream movies.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I'd watched the previous ones. Basically the entire movie is inside jokes that I don't and references that I don't understand.
Right.
And so it's so that was kind of frustrating. But on the flip side, maybe I would have liked it less if I was just callback. Right.
Yeah.
You seen anything else good lately?
Nope. Just getting through Mad Men. Okay. We did enough of that probably for all time.
No, we don't have to talk about Mad Men. Oh, I did have one more spinoff idea.
Oh.
If I can.
Lay it on me.
Yeah.
Yours were so good.
Okay.
I'm waiting till we get far enough in the series to tell my beloved about them.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, Mad Men, but it's Don Draper as a propaganda apparatchik in the Soviet Union, right? Where he's trying to come up with taglines to sell Leninism to the peasants.
That's great. That's great.
What is advertising? It's a billboard on the side of the road saying, "You will comply with the 5-year plan." If you don't like what people are saying, declare them counter-revolutionaries. we won't get too into Mad Men. I watched a few episodes of Ted, the Seth MacFarlane show.
Oh,
that used to be a movie. I've seen the movies, and now I watched a few episodes of the sitcom. Have you seen that?
Yes, I watched a few episodes of the first season. I've seen the first movie. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very. I think Ted is very funny.
Yeah.
I thought the show was very funny. I liked it. I thought it was good.
So I would give it a 7 out of 10.
I would give it a 7 out of 10.
So. What I do like is that, this is actually, good plotted sitcom,
yes.
Right? I like a good plot. This has, it hits all the right notes, good formula. The one complaint I have about it is my complaint about, Seth MacFarlane humor a lot of times is he just, starts riffing and saying weird things and making cultural references I don't understand at all.
Mm.
And I'm like, so some of that stuff doesn't really land with me.
I think he's generally pretty funny.
Yeah, I do. I like it. It is funny. I was watching with a friend, and we were talking about how it is interesting that we're now getting a late '90s period piece, right?
Yeah. It's the period of our childhood.
It is. Now we're finally getting.
We had that '70s show when we were a kid.
Now it's that '90s show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's I see a lot of Instagram Reels serves me a lot of content from Ted for some reason. I don't know. It's so funny when it decides, I just love Family Guy. I want to see tons of Family Guy. I think Family Guy is funny. I don't watch it regularly. But if you serve me a clip, I'm going to laugh at it. So I see the best bits of the Ted show. And there are some good ones. I liked it's from the first season, I think, when he says, and again, this just got served to me as a bit, that he will ask a question at the drug assembly. Did you see that one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so funny. He goes, "If you do this for me," he's negotiating with the principal. "The next time we have a drug assembly, I will ask a question of the speaker." She goes, "No one has ever asked it." And he's, "Not a fake question. I will ask, what should I do if I suspect a friend is using drugs?" That's great.
That's great.
It's good stuff. Yeah, it's a funny show.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how they decide the algorithm. I must have liked it accidentally once in the algorithm. Now it's like, oh, just send him all those clips.
I'm getting nothing but memes about the band Crowbar, which is in fact a band I care for a lot. Uh-huh. But I don't really consume music content via Instagram, and so I don't know exactly how they figured out that this one particular sludge band that I enjoy, I want to see endless meme content about. And I also don't know. This is what I have a hard time with the algorithm, is like, is the band experiencing some sort of revival on Instagram, or is just like every, you know, there's endless doors in which you can open up and all have like very particular types of content geared towards you.
You probably have this problem too, where every third one is just a guy in a Speedo.
Do you notice that?
What's going on with that?
I don't like it.
This doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, I recently realized that, you know, Lost is a television show I love that I've been obsessed with, that I've watched a bunch of times, that I used to write about for like my blog in college. And it just clicked with the algorithm that that's a show I like and you should show me clips of that. But that didn't become true last week. That's been true for 20 years.
Yeah. It's funny. Oh, you know what was a real treat recently? I was served a YouTube short of this very show, Freed Up.
See, that's what I want.
We've made it.
That's good.
Yeah.
It means we've made it. I want to be...
I didn't care for it, but...
No, I want to just be scrolling, and I want to see nothing. Now that I have, what, 4 or 5 different talk shows, I just want Rising, Freed Up, Free Media, Two Way, Robbie, Speedo, Robbie. Just Robbie.
Yeah, the film analysis of Freed Up, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and then people reacting to us. Mm-hmm. People, you know... And then reacting to the people reacting to us, and just this total parasitic network of content creation. My God, it would be glorious.
A snake eats its own tail.
Yes, the Ouroboros of content creation.
So, loyal listeners out there, let's see some fan-made content.
Yes, send it to us.
And then we'll respond to the fan-made content.
We'll react to the fan-made content.
Eventually, we'll never have to leave this room.
Maybe we never have.
Whoa.
Maybe time just... began it. Oh, that's what I saw. What am I? You asked me if I seen anything lately. What? It's because I drank so much yesterday. I saw Project Hail Mary.
Oh,
with
hey,
the
how
staff
was that?
Of Reason. Yeah. I don't know what you were doing.
Busy.
It was great. Unlike the rest of our colleagues, who I guess all read this book together in some book club that we're not invited to.
Oh yeah, I read the book.
Oh, you did read the book. Okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't get invited to that. I did not read the book. I did not know what it was about. I gathered that it was like a meteor's about to hit the sun and we have to blow up the meteor. I thought it was Armageddon. That's what I thought it was. Yeah. It's kind of that. It's kind of Interstellar with a different sci-fi thing instead of time travel. It was very good.
Yeah.
It was, from what I understand, an extremely faithful adaptation of the source material.
Right.
I thought it was great. It was very good. Anyone would like this movie. It you can take your family to see this movie. It's just a good... pro-America, pro-individualism. It had a good moral message. Even some religious notes, maybe. Good movie.
Okay.
Good, solid movie. I recommend it.
Yeah, I really like the book. So Andy Weir is the author of the book. He wrote The Martian, Artemis, Project Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Martian, obviously, the movie with Matt Damon.
Martian was great.
I haven't seen that, and I actually haven't read the book either. I really like the second book, which is like it's a mystery set on the moon.
Ooh.
Yes, so I really like that. Hopefully they make that a movie too. But
they can't go wrong with these. The Martian was great. This one's great.
Yeah, there seems to be
certain
sense of relief of people like, oh, we can make just good, nice movies again.
Yes.
Not everything has to be slop or, on the flip side, some deep deconstruction
of
the
medium. This was a nice little antidote to slop. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an adventure. It's nice. Human triumph of our spirit over a problem.
Yeah.
It was good.
That's classic sci-fi, right?
Yes.
Scientists in a room figuring things out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We can still do that. They can still figure things out.
And from my understanding, there's a play within a play in it. So.
All right. We'll leave it there. Perfect place to end. Thanks for watching, guys. Send us that fan-made content.
We're waiting.
And we'll react to it. Bye-bye.